Support for NPR podcasts comes from HBO, presenting the new dramatic series In Treatment, Monday through Friday at 9:30 p.m.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. The band Carbon Silicon isn't nearly as well known as the bands the two co-founders came from. Mick Jones, Carbon Silicon's lead guitarist and singer, was the lead guitarist of the seminal British punk band The Clash and co-wrote many of the band's songs with Joe Strummer. In fact, in Rolling Stone's list of the 10 best songwriting duos ever, Strummer and Jones were number 3, after Lennon and McCartney and Jagger and Richards. Carbon Silicon's Tony James was the bass player in Generation X, the band that introduced singer Billy Idol. James and Jones formed Carbon Silicon in 2002. They've released a lot of music on the internet, but they've just released their first full-length CD. It's called The Last Post. Let's start with the opening track, which is called The News.
People started caring about what they ate, and people started smiling at everyone they meet, and people started looking for good instead of bad, realized what they could lose and what they always had. People started growing instead of being crushed, and people started slowing down instead of being rushed. People started looking with very different eyes at this information that comes as a surprise. Good morning, here's the news, and all of it is good. Good evening, here's the news, and all of it is good, and the weather's good.
That's the news from the new Carbon Silicon recording, The Last Post. Mick Jones, Tony James, welcome to Fresh Air.
Hello.
Hi there.
What you're playing on this new CD is so catchy. How would you describe what you're going for musically and lyrically?
Old doing new.
Yeah. I mean, I hope we're trying to put across a positive attitude. You know, we're still playing the music that we love, you know, and I hope we're finding that vitality and positivity.
I don't think it's vitality, it's vitalis, I think, is what we have.
Yeah.
Mick, your voice has such warmth, and it's a different sound than I associate with the more confrontational style of The Clash.
Well, it's the same voice, obviously. You know what I mean? I used to sing more backup vocals, and Joe used to do the main singing, and now I sort of do the main singing and some of the backing vocals on the record. So that has obviously changed. But as far as being non... we're still, like, we're not quite as confrontational in terms of horribleness, but in a nice way, I still feel we are.
Got something to say.
Well, you first played together in the pre-Clash days in a band called London SS. What brought you back together?
Well, we've been best friends for 30-something years, you know, and we never set out to form a band. You know, we just started off with one song called MP3 about giving music away on the internet. This was 5 years ago. And, you know, we didn't sit down and go, oh, let's form a band. We just sat down and went, let's write a song together, you know.
We sort of ended up doing it, really.
Yeah, and it grew into a band because we wrote a lot of songs together, and then we thought maybe we'd go and play live, and then maybe we'd put a record out.
But it sort of came from out from other things, because we've been talking about it before we even started playing together. Again, we've been talking about how can you do music if you're our age and with any meaning, and we were looking for some meaning in everything that we were trying to do in order to bring some value to it.
Yes.
And so we started, like... you know, we could just do this, and we have to get over a lot of horrible truths about ourselves and stuff, but we managed it, and so, like, that stuff don't matter.
Well, let's hear another track from the new Carbon Silicon CD called The Last Post, and I thought we'd hear Caesar's Palace. Before we hear it, why don't you talk about your approach to writing songs together, or specifically to writing this song together?
I just write on the bus and things like that when I'm sitting upstairs, and I'm trying not to get happy slapped.
I often write a lot of stuff while I'm driving. I sit there with that, dangerous though that is. I sit there with a notepad on my on my lap.
That's really dangerous too.
I know, but
especially if you're on the phone with the other hand.
Yeah, I've perfected this way of just scribbling on big sheets of paper on my lap. Something about the rhythm of driving at 70 miles an hour.
That's the same with the bus. It's like gadoon, 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 gadoon,
yes.
And that's the way you get the rhythm. It's actually in the air.
Well, let's hear Caesar's Palace from the new Carbon Silicon CD. And this is Mick Jones and Tony James.
I wish we could see where the dreams all went. I wish we could see where the money got spent. I wish we could see that the greatest crime was to fool all other people to spend all the time. I wish we could see why we need so much stuff. I wish we could see that enough is enough. I wish we could see that the going's got tough, cause my living was crammed and my past is bad off. Value what is necessary, leave what is not, and tell me what I'm doing in another shot. I wish we could see that we're out of control. I wish we could.
That's Caesar's Palace from the new Carbon Silicon CD. And Carbon Silicon features Mick Jones and Tony James. What does Carbon Silicon mean to you?
Well, you know, it's two things. I mean, we both have different views of it. You know, I like the idea that it was the combination of carbon meaning soul and silicon meaning computers. And it was like old and modern together, you know. And in a way, it represented our two different personalities. You know, Mick comes from a sort of organic, regular life type stuff, and I like computers and the technology stuff. So it was a combination of those two things I thought suited what we were about.
For me, it's like a carbon ashtray, like a charcoal ashtray with a diamond in the middle of it.
See, that totally illustrates what I'm talking about.
When you first started playing together in the 70s in a band called London SS,
yes.
What was that band like?
MC5.
Oh.
We did MC5 numbers and Flaming Groovies numbers and the Odd Stones number and numbers off Lenny K's Nuggets. It was all just copy
rock
stuff.
So it was like garage rock, hard rock,
and a
political
edge to the Standells.
Yeah, kind of very garage rock. Not especially political at that stage.
I just really wanted to be in a band, and also that was a very bad name that we had as well. And so obviously,
I mean, SS, you know.
I definitely,
especially, we were very ashamed of that. That was like when we were young and stupid, you know.
You know, I have this theory about this band, because it never really worked out, that band.
We never played a date or recorded anything or anything.
Somehow
like that.
I believe that sort of karma stopped that group being a success, because it would have been a very negative thing to be propagating.
And it was a load of old rubbish anyway.
You look back
fine.
At the sort of, you know, of your youthful excesses, and you go, this was a stupid idea, guys. But, you know, you look back at that with the experience
and that's
of being 50-year-old.
Especially funny, because we're back together again, and every person who ever asks a question, everybody brings that up. And so it's our shame that we have to bear every time.
It's
we
our
bear
cross.
It, and we bear it, and we try, and we feel shame, how shameful it is, and we try to, you know, just try to give us a break on that, really, because we were really young.
Let me just enhance the shame by asking, why did you call yourselves that in the first place?
Well, you know, when you're 18...
It was like the London SS. We were trying to say, oh, it's a Social Security. And also, it was like the New York Dolls.
It scanned
We loved the New York Dolls, and so we thought we could be shocking like that.
That's
right.
It was
like pre-punk stupidity.
You know, it went, New York Dolls, London SS. It was
well,
kind
it
of
wasn't,
it scanned
we shouldn't
nicely.
Really be talking, like, making a big deal about it.
Yes.
So fed up with it.
I know. We see now. We talked 5 minutes about it.
Before you got into a more punk side of things, you were both into glam rock, right?
We like the New York Dolls and Johnny Thunders and those kind of bands.
Mm-hmm. And the Stooges.
And the Stooges.
So, can you talk about, like, were there two different styles that early in your career you inhabited on stage, both in terms of?
No, not at all. Really. No. I mean, I think, you know, we came out of. Remember, the New York Dolls was 73, you know, so the glam rock period was 72, 73. So,
yeah,
you know, it was 75 before we were playing.
And by that time, the platforms had got lower.
Yes.
Like, because they were so difficult. Sometimes I used to go down, I had big platforms on, then I'd go head first down the stairs.
That's
so
right.
I was glad all that stopped.
It was an uncomfortable look.
So you did the platform thing and the glitter
before,
and the eye
before.
Makeup.
Yeah. We did the platforms.
Yeah, 74, 75. It was never popular with our parents.
So
we went to Bieber's and we bought a load of ocelot-type material, and then we got someone to do us a pair of really tight trousers each.
Yeah.
Do you remember? We almost had to be stitched into these trousers.
Well, Bieber's T-shirts only came in size 0, so you had to be really thin to get them on.
Now, the Sex Pistols were the first, like, really famous punk band. You were already playing when
Well, the Clash were already playing, right? Well,
Clash were like about a few months before. They were already going, and there was a couple of other groups that were going but didn't have the direction of under the label of punk or something like that. There was bands like The Stranglers were around before, Eddie and the Hot Rods, The Jam was sort of playing already, and there was a load of bands, but they hadn't quite made the proper transition. But the Sex Pistols, when you see them, it was like all over, completely different thing.
Because they were the first of that.
Did those bands have an influence on you, or did you feel already formed by the time they were?
The bands we just mentioned, the pop. Well, not as much as the Sex Pistols.
The Pistols definitely changed things,
and that was like the new thing that came in after the Pistols, and all groups that had come before it, they sort of weren't keyed up, if you know what I mean. And then, like, the groups that came after the Pistols, well, there was, like, a few of them that were, like, kind of good. But I mean, we were always saying that everybody can do it, but you still needed to have a bit of an idea or something.
Because the ironic thing was that that look was so powerful, yet people were able to change overnight, because if you had long hair, it was really easy to just go and cut it all off and rip the arms out of your T-shirt, and then you were on it. Yeah. You know what I mean? If they'd been the other way around and you had to grow your hair,
it would have taken, years. Right? But it did actually, and because England's only a small place, you know, Britain's a pretty small place, it spread like wildfire around the country.
And it had taken a while to understand that to be different, suddenly you could have short hair and ripped T-shirts and tight trousers instead
all
of long hair.
All that stuff was really
flares.
Important because everybody had flares, right?
Yeah,
and then
so
they looked at you and went, like, bloody hell, if you had straight trousers, it was outrageous.
My guests are the founders of the band Carbon Silicon, Mick Jones and Tony James. James used to play in the band Generation X. Jones was the lead guitarist for The Clash and co-wrote many of their songs. The punk ethic was kind of, you didn't need technique, you needed passion and attitude.
Yes.
What did that mean for you both in terms of how you presented yourselves and what your attitude and style was as performers?
Well, I just wanted to play a few tunes and have a few laughs and
go play places.
And
we'd gone our separate ways. Mick was in The Clash. I was in Generation X with Billy Idol. Mm-hmm. You know, these were in a similar scene but slightly different in terms of the music. I mean, we were a bit more, Generation X was a bit more like an early Who, whereas you were more like a sort of an early Kinks, Rolling Stones. Would you describe it?
I don't know, early paleontological.
I still hear a Kinks influence in Carbon Silicon.
Well, we still like them.
I love the Kinks, and obviously, like, you know,
those staccato riffs almost became part of your repertoire as well, of those classic Clash tracks.
Should we hear The Whole Truth as we're talking about the Kinks?
Yeah,
okay. Do you want to say something about writing this?
This is a mixed thing.
Mick, you want to say something about writing The Whole Truth?
No, not really, if that's okay.
Okay, I will just
make
introduce
out your own
it then.
Mind and listen.
This is The Whole Truth from the new Carbon Silicon CD.
The truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth. The truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth. So help me, truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth. The truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth. Bright out windows of the police van. You can see a lost flash moments as a free man. What did they expect you to say? Where you was hoping it would go away. The truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth. The truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth. So help me, truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth. The truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth. Chance ended up in grief. Cleared out the house and phoned up your brief. All this stress is making me ill. I've had enough, so do what you will. In your dreams, in your fantasy, the judge and jury and the court agree you should go free. You should go free.
That's The Whole Truth from the new Carbon Silicon CD, The Last Post. And Carbon Silicon is made up of Mick Jones, who used to be with The Clash, and Tony James, who was with Generation X. Mick, can I ask you how you first met Joe Strummer?
Well, Joe was playing in this group, the 101ers.
I mean, we used to go and see him together,
that's
didn't
right.
we, all the time?
So,
and 101 was like the address of the squat that he was living in?
Yeah, 101 Waterton Road.
Yeah.
Anyway, so they were quite a happening group, really, and he was a really good And so one day, the rest of us, we approached him, like the manager, and the manager just went to one of his gigs. We all went to one of his gigs, and he went round back and said, I want you to meet these guys, and that was us. And so we kind of like, we arranged that do you want to come round and meet us? And we were all in a squat in Shepherd's Bush, and he came round. And that was when we first probably met him. Although we'd seen him in the Dole office beforehand, and also down Portobello Road, like as you do, you know, sort of nodding, all right, but nothing more. And then he kind of come round to where we were at. And then he said, do you want to join this group, these guys? And Joe could already see the way things were going and went, yeah, I'm in.
So I guess, you know, hearing you sing on Carbon Silicon, I'm wondering, like, why didn't you see yourself as the lead singer of your band?
Oh, you know why? Because I started on like a stylophone, you know, this kind of electronic organ that you hear on David Bowie's Space Oddity. And then I moved up to drums, and then I moved up to bass. And then I thought, I can handle a couple more strings here. And then I started playing guitar. And so I thought it was always cooler just to play the guitar, and just like you didn't have to work so hard and pressure wasn't on you. And then after Joe went, sort of stepped up and started doing it. But I always wanted to just do guitar and sing a few backups.
So you didn't want the pressure of being the front man?
Or anything, no.
See, now you know.
And did, I mean, this will sound like a stupid question since The Clash was such a great band, but what did Joe Strummer always take the band in the direction you wanted it to go in?
Well, a lot of the time we were just intuitively doing what we did. We never thought about it all the time, you know. We just did things instinctively, and so I know that he was quite scared that I was leading it down the drain. So.
You mentioned that he was afraid, Strummer was afraid you were leading the band down the drain.
Yeah, well, that's like,
you were actually forced out of the band. And
yeah, and that, imagine that. That's your own band you get chucked out of. Being chucked out of bands ain't a big deal. It took years to get over, though, traumatically. Yeah. But it used to happen all the time. It was called, can we take you for a drink? And that meant we'd go for a drink, and then it means you're getting fired. Yeah. If you're in a band, it's like, that used to happen all the time, you know. So just we got fed up with each other, basically. Yeah. But it was loads of fun. But in the end, you know what I mean? I think the bigger we got, the more screwed up we became. Mm. You know what I mean? Because we couldn't. We were trying really hard and we couldn't handle it. It was just too much for us. And the bigger we got, the worse we felt.
How much of like a crisis, an identity crisis even, was it for you?
It was very bad for me.
Pushed out of the Clash.
It was very bad for me. It was so bad that and it was right around the time of the Notting Hill Carnival, and so I couldn't walk around without seeing somebody I knew.
Naturally, my phone's ringing.
And then I kind of tried to disguises for a while. I dyed my hair, put glasses on.
You look like
I grew a beard. I looked like Manson. I went to Paris. I was afraid to see anybody. It was a messed up period, yeah. And then we soon became friends again, that we just never got together again as a group. But
You were putting BAD together pretty quickly, weren't you? And you were helping me
straight away.
Put together Zig Zig Sputnik.
There was that period where we did a group with Topper.
That's right. Topper played for a while,
Topper
didn't he?
And Leo was in that group as well. And that was like all sporty, that group.
And we all used to play
football
together.
We didn't last that long.
Yeah, remember, every Tuesday, BAD versus Zig Zig Sputnik.
That
football.
Was good. And we were called Rail Westway.
Well, I just want to play one really classic Clash record while you're here. So I thought we'd play London Calling. And Mick Jones, you co-wrote this. Would you talk a little bit about the song, like getting the song together?
Well, there was, at the time of writing it, there was this map that they showed you. If Thames Barrier ever bursts its banks, they showed you what part of London would be underwater. And it was like completely all around, all the West End and
everywhere we live
and everything like that. If they ever broke our banks, we'd all be flooded. And that was like the original kind of apocalyptic
Future.
Message of the song.
Yeah.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with Mick Jones, who was the lead guitarist of The Clash and co-wrote many of their songs, and Tony James, who played bass in Generation X and Zig Zig Sputnik. In 2002, James and Jones co-founded the band Carbon Silicon. They have a new CD called The Last Post. Earlier in the interview, I talked with Mick Jones about The Clash. Let's hear a couple of the bands Tony James was in before Carbon Silicon. Here's James playing bass with Generation X, featuring Billy Idol singing lead on Your Generation, recorded in 1977. Tony James changed his look and sound for the band Zig Zig Sputnik. He had a tower of pink hair with black highlights. He has a really good story to tell us about that hair, but first, let's hear the band. From 1986, this is 21st Century Boy, featuring James on synth space bass guitar.
Ow, ow, stereo!
This is the new age of television.
Can the cloud create this is some X-Kid, time to go, go. I'm a space cowboy. I'm a 21st century Whoopi boy.
Let's get back to our interview with Tony James and Mick Jones, who now play together in the band Carbon Silicon. Tony, I have a question for you about Zig Zig Sputnik, and this is going to be about how you looked in it. You know,
yes.
You had talked before about how during punk, hair got shorter, and you could change your look. You could just, like, cut your hair and make it short. But in Zig Zig Sputnik, you had these, like, really long, spiky things piled up high on your head.
Yes.
Was that your real hair?
Well, that's why that band took 5 years to get together.
It took 5 years in makeup.
Why did you head in that direction?
You know what? The coloured hair were extensions. They were tied into our
hair.
And actually, the singer, it was Degville's idea because, you know, he had shared an apartment with Boy George at the time, and they both had this freaky, super extended hair. You know, and it was actually made of bits of fur, like out of these. You used to buy these goat's hair rugs, cut it into little pieces, dye it pink, and tie it into your own hair with pipe cleaners.
Hence the word rug.
Slang for wigs in English. So all those extensions were tied into my hair, which was long, with pipe cleaners. So it was possible to take the extensions out, you know, on a weekend if you were having
a day off.
Thank
you for joining us for hair tips.
Yes, but generally having 2 meters of pink hair hanging down your back was a pain in the arse, as were walking around in girls' high-heeled shoes. So it was a bit of a sort of a glam rock revisited, but it was a startling look, you know, and again, set it aside from everything else at the time.
How did it feel to go into that look after coming out of punk?
Well, it was, you know, again, it was shocking because suddenly everybody had short hair and everybody looked normal. So to suddenly look like this space monster was totally fresh, you know. So it was a startling look around London. Not so popular with getting girlfriends, I have to tell you.
Why do you think that was?
Because we look ridiculous.
So now you're on stage looking just like yourself.
Also, I have to say, you end up having sex, and then you get out of bed, and there's half a pile of pink hair still in the bed.
You wouldn't take it off for your intimate moments.
It was a real hazard look for groupies, I tell you.
you wouldn't take all that stuff off.
What? No. Well, that would be really disappointing.
Take too long.
Take too long.
They like it.
And put it all in on moments, the side of the bed.
In moments of extreme passion.
In a glass on the side of the bed.
Girls would pull your hair and it would come out in their hands. This is before I was married, I have to tell you.
Oh, of course. So now on stage, you look like yourself.
We do. We look like ourselves.
And eventually we found ourselves.
Yes.
Is it a more...
Hair's not an issue now for us.
Do you feel any more...
No longer an issue.
No longer an issue.
Do you feel any more vulnerable or naked just performing as yourselves without any special clothes or persona on stage?
Actually, I find it now more comfortable going on stage than ever because actually I'm getting up and I'm being really me and it's just about the guitar playing and the singing and the songs. It's not about the image suddenly, although I suppose you could say there is an image, i.e. an image of 50-year-old guys being themselves. But this is not pantomime like Sputnik and it's not an aggressive look like punk was. It's us being just ourselves. I mean, do you find it comfortable just doing that?
Yeah, I look at every gig we play as an opportunity to take command of the stage and do something with it, do something good, you know? I'm like, totally, okay, I've been through it, I made my amends with everything. And so I'm just cool, so I'm just happy with what I'm, just to be here.
How about your musicianship? How would you say, have there been, like, new influences that have changed your
playing? Well, it has definitely
playing.
For me, because uh-huh. I never played guitar before.
That's right.
I always played bass in Generation X and with Zig Zig Sputnik. I was the bass player, mm-hmm. whereas now I'm playing six-string guitar, you know, so... For me, over the last 5 years, I've had to have a massive learning curve.
Why would you want to make that change and learn something new later
because,
in life?
Funny enough, well, it was Mick's idea. He went, you know what, why don't you play guitar, not bass? But actually, you know what, it's been such a positive. Because,
that's a good thing, huh? Because yeah. it makes us sound fresh again. Because
yes.
It's like you're a new person taking it on, not
yes.
like...
So suddenly,
someone, you know, jaded.
Yeah, so suddenly for me at 50, learning Johnny B. Goode, it's like, whoa, this is so exciting to play. Whereas if I've been playing it for 30 years, you get jaded. And you know, so a lot of that, I hope that excitement that I have about playing guitar, that comes out in the record because it's a guy playing it just as if I was an 18-year-old playing it for the first time.
There's something
and
very punk about that, you know, the whole
do-it-yourself
thing.
Yeah, all
yeah.
of those things.
I think
you know?
we haven't forgotten what we learnt then. I think we still apply it to most
yeah.
things that we do, you know.
There's so much that we're doing, you know. We do our own artwork, we're recording the records ourselves. You know,
we like to try. The only thing we like to do is like we like to try and do it before we'd have to talk about it.
Yeah,
and so we don't like seem like if it doesn't happen, then we seem like fakes or something.
So it's been fantastic learning all this new stuff. It keeps you. I don't say keeps you young, but it keeps your attitude fresh and vibrant.
My guests are the founders of the band Carbon Silicon, Mick Jones and Tony James. James used to play bass in Generation X. Jones was the lead guitarist for The Clash and co-wrote many of their songs. Joe Strummer was The Clash's lead singer, but Jones sang lead on several of their tracks, including their biggest hit, Should I Stay or Should I Go? Here it is.
To let me know, should I stay or should I go? If you say that you are mine, I'll be here till the end of time. So you got to let me know, should I stay or should I go? It's always tease, tease, tease. You're happy when I'm on my knees. One day is fine, the next is black. So if you want me off your back, well come on and let me know, should I stay or should I go? Should I stay or should I go now? Should I stay or should I go now?
Mick, another question from an earlier part of your life. You were largely raised by your grandmother.
That's right.
And when you were in the Clash, and the Clash was really big, you were still going home to your grandmother's place for...
Very, very often, yeah. I sometimes get myself a flat for a few months, and then I ended up going back to the...
For some people, it's so peculiar when you go back to, like, the bedroom that you grew up in after you're an adult.
I know.
And it makes you feel like a child again. So what was it like after being on the road with the Clash to then go home to the bedroom you grew up in at your grandmother's place?
It was it was great, actually. Well, sort of where I learned to play guitar, in the same room. Mm. You know what I'm saying? Because I was, like, spent, a year solid in there, playing along with people's records first, and so it was like very good. And then before that I lived with my grandmother, her sister and sister-in-law, so it was like I was brought up by like three old ladies, so I suppose it does sound quite peculiar. But
what about when you signed your first record deal and you paid for your grand to go to America to see your mother, because your mother's American?
Yeah, that's right.
And we pretended your grandmother's flat was our flat for 3 weeks.
Yeah, it was great. We had our Rat Pack pad, and it was fantastic.
We'd go
clubbing
and pretending
it was our flat.
We'd go clubbing and bring girls back and say we had this really cool penthouse flat. It's really his grandmother's house.
How did your grandmother react when she came home?
We moved it all back again.
We moved
when she got back.
We knew she was coming back, and moved
it all back.
Now, Tony, when you were young, like in your college days, right after that, you were a computer programmer.
Yes.
What was computer programming like then?
Oh,
like,
it was like...
It was big cards, and they punched them.
I used to work at a place called the National Physical Laboratory in England, and this was this sort of secret government laboratory. It was where they designed the bouncing ball.
Right, well,
Barnes Woolley's work.
Obviously,
there.
This is like you've probably signed the official secrets. You get but when, into trouble.
When I worked there, I worked in this entire building full of boffins, and they had this whole room full of equipment, and the bloke would be talking into a microphone going, "Hello? 1, 2, trying to get the machine to respond.
He's like the roadie
early roadie. But, you know, so I had this early kind of stuff with computers. But obviously it wasn't until 20 years later you could buy one and have it in your pocket.
So your band Carbon Silicon has been making music for 5 years.
Yes.
And you've been putting
Over
5 years. Yeah. And you've been putting it on the internet.
Yes.
But now you have like a genuine CD.
Conventional record.
Conventional CD. So, look, what do you like about a CD that singles on an internet won't provide you?
Well, I mean, for me as a fan...
Did I say an internet?
Yeah.
For me as a fan, look,
when we bought records when I was young at school, you walked through the schoolyard with an Alice Cooper album under your arm. It sort of said what you were about. It defined the cultural reference of the things that you liked.
Right.
So... CDs are not quite as good because they're smaller, but there's still something about having that tangible product in your hand, because it has, you know, when you're playing the records, you're leafing through the artwork and reading all the things on the sleeve.
I think it can all peacefully coexist together.
So that's great. But you can have them, we believe you can have them both. You can give the record away for free on the internet, but you can also give people the choice to walk into a store and buy a CD, which people seem to want to do.
And what do you like about having a CD of a bunch of tracks? Is it... As opposed to people listening to you one track at a time.
A lot of people have said that often you see the music as a whole on a CD, and there is something about ordering the tracks.
Especially our album is really it's like the whole one continuity of idea that goes around the whole thing. Even the gaps between the tracks are worked out and everything.
That's right. I mean, that's the biggest problem that artists have at the moment. It's the fact that if you buy the record on iTunes, you could buy just two or three tracks and put them in a different order.
Yeah, and I don't like the taking out of context. That's why I don't even like that shuffle thing so much, because I like to hear the whole album in its context. Yeah.
So that gives you
a better sense of it. I hate this fractured world we live in.
That's the biggest problem, you know. It'd be like going to see a painting and only getting a little corner of it for
just
the moment. You know what I mean? And then buying just the you know, buying a Mona Lisa and only buying the eyeball because that was the bit you liked. You know what I mean? It's not going to be ultimately be the complete experience that he had in mind.
But some of the tracks from the CD were already on the internet, right?
What? Yeah, loads of our tracks are on the internet. And if you look on the internet, you can pick up...
You can get everything.
Everything from everything. Our career.
So you let people do it either way.
We're That's happy fine. For people to right. do that.
Mm-hmm. That's fine. It's good for the culture. Let's move things
good
forward.
Good for the culture, you know.
It must be really fulfilling for you both, having been together in a band in the 70s when mm-hmm. you were first getting started, and to be together again. I mean, one of the great things about an old friend, among other things, is that you can corroborate each other's memories, because yes. it's so hard to tell sometimes what really happened and what didn't. Yeah. And
that's right.
Yes. But you know what? This time around, you know, 3 weeks ago, we're sitting in New York playing a gig, a sold-out gig, to loads of people who are all loving our new songs. How lucky are we to get to do it this time again around with my best friend?
Yeah,
what
that's
a great,
so great.
How lucky
or just
is that?
To even survive, to be alive right. is great.
Well, to survive
without
alive,
even
didn't,
anything.
Didn't, may I say,
how
didn't you come pretty close to death?
I did in 1988, yes. That was true, yes, I did. I nearly died.
From?
I had pneumonia, chickenpox pneumonia, actually. It was very serious if you're an older. Got it off my daughter. But luckily I survived, and that's sincere, by the way, yeah. seriously. And it's like it was a big change in my life, and now I'm going through another one.
Maybe that teaches you as well that nothing really matters. It's
just
being alive.
This
and...
1 second now, right now, this one.
Well, right. How did you emerge differently after that experience?
Well, I crawled in, and I was determined to walk out. Proudly, so that was quite an achievement. And I don't know, I realised I was like on a life support machine, we call a ventilator, for about 21 days. And
that always looks like it would just hurt so much.
Well, it was very hard to breathe, yes. And but also my view when I started to, I was actually unconscious for about 2 weeks. They made me unconscious because I had chicken pots, and so I would have scratched with all the spots and stuff if I had been, so they kind of immobilized me. But also I was on not being able to breathe, and so and then when I started to come around, they bring you around really slowly, so and my view was very limited to this pipe. All I could see was this tube, a pipe which was made, it said made in Sweden. Mm. And that was my all I could see.
I mean, being older, we've all experienced almost like life-changing experiences, like whether that's death of parents or people that we know, you know. And it maybe it, you know, sounds corny, but it really makes you appreciate the moment that we've been given.
Well, it's really been great to talk with you both. I love the new CD. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. I hope people get some positivity from it.
Mick Jones and Tony James co-founded the band Carbon Silicon. The band's new CD is called The Last Post. Here's another track from it, Tell It Like It Is.
Tell it like it is. We gotta stop going so fast to figure out what's going on. Tell it how it is. I know there's lots wrong, but we gotta try be together. Tell it like it is. We're like a ship barely afloat and we can't go on. Tell it how it is. I wanna be around for the good things. I wanna come along. Tell it like it is. We're in a race against time. We should have never run.
British drummer and producer Martin Atkins got his start in the late 70s playing with John Lydon's post-Sex Pistols group Public Image Limited. Atkins went on to work with industrial rockers like Nine Inch Nails and Ministry, as well as his own group Pigface. During a trip to China in 2006, he was surprised to find many underground bands that reminded him of New York and London in the late 70s and early 80s. He went on to compile an anthology of Chinese pop music called Look Directly Into the Sun. Critic Milo Miles has a review.
Until now, China seemed far from a hotbed of underground rock. Way back when punk first broke, there was a captivating but very derivative outfit called the Dragons. Starting in the mid-80s, there's Cui Jian, who released some potent Springsteenian protest numbers. But he's been much lower profile of late, and one man does not a movement make. So, hearing that Martin Atkins was putting together a sampler of underground players he heard in China, you would expect a novelty with maybe a couple bright, snarly moments. Instead, Look Directly Into the Sun, China Pop 2007, is one of those increasingly rare rock surprises, a collection with enough wit, sass, and smart noise to belong with the post-punk classics from 25 years ago. Here's the group Carsick Cars running wild with some traditional Chinese string instruments. No wonder they just had a gig opening for Sonic Youth. The anthology performers show they grasp punk anarchy with names like Voodoo Kung Fu and Queen C Big Shark. Some bands on Look Directly Into the Sun have obvious inspirations, Iggy Pop, Ramones, Clash, New Order. But every time these are completely assimilated, heard, and internalized in fresh ways. Here the band The Scoff put the shock back in the shock of recognition with Nasty. The companion CD to Look Directly Into the Sun is called Made in China, Martin Atkins' China Dub Sound System. The prominence of Atkins' name is the giveaway. While it involves a number of the players from the anthology, it's mostly an Atkins mashup collage that suggests a weak exotica release from his band Pigface. Besides, it's artsy, unlike all the China bands. On Look Directly Into the Sun, anybody can feel the crude and eager appeal of Rococo's We Just Free. In the West, when the risk and rebellion once synonymous with rock are either empty or ironic gestures, Look Directly Into the Sun belongs with the punk samplers of yore because this underground has something at stake. There may be a Beijing pop festival nowadays, but Big Brother is still in the audience, always listening. And every performer on Look Directly Into the Sun knows that.
Milo Miles lives in Boston. He reviewed Look Directly Into the Sun on the Invisible China imprint. You can download podcasts of our show on our website, freshair.npr.org. I'm Terry Gross.